So, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the end of the retreat. So, I have a few bits and pieces to say about the process of leaving retreat and a few other reflections. First thing to say, really, is thank you all so much for coming. It's been really a pleasure being on retreat with you all. It's been really fun talking to each of you and getting to know you. And yeah, I've had a really good time. So thank you ever so much for coming. So, in terms of advice for leaving a retreat, we've spent, well, my notes say we spent 11 days in a quiet place, and I know that for some of us, circumstances have varied, and it hasn't always been the quietest. We've got scaffolders just down the road, so yeah, I know how that goes sometimes. But we've spent 11 days focusing on practice in a retreat kind of mindset. Being on retreat's really nice. It gives us time and space to work through difficult stuff that might be coming up. You're with noble friends. You have access to teachers. It's a nice place to be. Daily life is often not like that. I'll be going back to work fairly soon. Like I said before, I have to turn on my work laptop this afternoon to find out what mayhem has been going on in my absence, so that'll be fun. But yeah, daily life is a busy place, right? There's a lot going on. There's often not enough time to fit it all in, or at least it feels that way. And like Yasmin said the other evening, people often think meditation retreats are kind of weird. Like, why would you ever do this? Why would you want to? Yeah, people don't always get it. And to make matters worse, access to people who really do get it can potentially be harder. It's not impossible. You certainly can get hold of teachers if you really set your mind to it, but it's not just a case of waiting 3 days for your next interview. So, a few pieces of advice. First, take it slow. Particularly if you haven't done a lot of concentration practice before, you may find that you are a bit slow for the next few days. And I don't mean that you don't understand things. I mean that you're just kind of moving more slowly around the world. I think I already told you the embarrassing story about realizing I'd been spending 10 minutes staring at a coffee cup, so I'm not going to repeat that one. But yeah, you may find that things are a little bit different for a while as you're getting back into the groove, getting back up to the speed of daily life. It's very helpful to be kind, both to yourself and to other people. You're coming out of this experience and going into a very different kind of experience. It may take some time to adjust, and yeah, it's helpful to recognize that you're going through a kind of transition in that way. It's helpful not to put too much pressure on yourself to do anything in particular. It's also helpful to be kind to the people around you, not all of whom are as fabulously enlightened as us, not all of whom necessarily have the same interest in things like ethical behavior and a contemplative attitude to life, and so on and so forth. There's a pub actually just out the back of my house, and late at night, I've been staying in the spare room, and with the windows open, yeah, you can hear all manner of things going on, and I can assure you that the people in that pub were not on any kind of meditation retreat. There's all sorts of things going on out there. Each of us is dealing with our own life situation in our own way, and people are often dealing with things that are not apparent from the outside. So it's very helpful, I think, just to try to be patient with other people. If it all gets to be a bit too much, then it's very good if we can find someone to talk to. Now, at this point, let me just have a quick check of the participants list. That's tricky. Right. I may need to loop back around to this later. I'll keep the participant list open so I can keep an eye on it. Just let me rearrange my screen. So what we would normally say, what Lee and I would normally say in terms of, if it all gets a bit much, is just to find someone to talk to. They don't necessarily need to know anything about Buddhism. They just have to be a good listener. Last thing to say really is to remember impermanence, right? It's been a theme all the way along. Retreats, like everything else, they come and go. Experiences come and go, good times, bad times, all of these things come and go. If you do come off retreat and you find that you're having a hard time for whatever reason, that too will come and go. That's how it works. But it can be interesting to think about how we might want to practice beyond the retreat. So I have a few suggestions from a variety of sources. And again, I think I mentioned this yesterday, but just to reiterate, it's worth being gentle with yourself. You know, many people get very fired up at the end of the retreat. You know, this is the direct path. This is the one true way, that kind of thing. I'm going to practice 17 hours a day and fit everything else in around that somehow. I suggest not making life-altering decisions right away. At the end of every retreat that my Zen teacher does, he always says, if it's a good idea now, it'll still be a good idea in a week's time. It doesn't hurt to just give time to let things settle a little bit before quitting your job or whatever else you might currently be inclined to do. And really strong heroic intentions can sometimes crash and burn. Daily life has a way of creeping back in and filling up all of the little spaces in life and not really giving you as much time as you thought you were going to have. As that process of daily life gradually re-infiltrating all the spaces in your head is happening, that's a good opportunity for some mindfulness. You can look to see what you're coming back to. What are you having to pick back up as you come off retreat and back into daily life? Is it necessary? Is it valuable? Is it something that's nourishing? Is it something that you want in your life? There's that famous quote from William Morris that you should have nothing in your houses that you don't know to be useful or believe to be beautiful. And we can look at that more generally in life. Some things we just have to do because, yeah, they're useful, they're necessary. Some things are good to have in our lives because we believe them to be beautiful. Some things in an ideal world are both. And then some things maybe not so much. So as you return to the daily grind, keep an eye out for what you're getting yourself back into and occasionally ask, is this something that I really want to be doing? Now, we have a certain amount of momentum built up as a result of the practice that we've done on this retreat. And in order to keep that going, it's very helpful indeed to have a daily practice. So, daily practice is composed of two aspects, formal meditation and informal practice. A question that people always want to know, so how much meditation should I do? Lee's teacher Ayakama would say that if you want to maintain the current level of concentration you have at this point in the retreat in your daily life, then you will need to practice 2 hours a day, an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. That's if you want to maintain what you have right now. If you do less than that, then concentration will fade over time. Daily life has a way of abrading it, of wearing away at our concentration. And the way that will manifest is if you've gotten up to, let's say you're up to the third jhana right now, then after a while you'd only really be able to get one or two. Three will kind of wobble and then vanish, and then two and then one. If you do an extra sit on a particular day, then some of the jhanas might come back. If you do a day-long retreat, then they might all come back. But again, they'll wear away gradually over time. Sooner or later, you'll need to do another long retreat, and yeah, then you'll be able to explore, go back over the territory you've already explored, and potentially move forward if that's what you're interested in doing. A lot of practice in daily life is kind of just cleaning out the gunj that the daily life throws at us, basically. Things happen, it stirs us up, and daily practice is a nice way to let that settle down and process and be let go. Lee's recommendations for daily practice, he suggests trying to do an hour of practice every day, split 50-50 between concentration and insight. So spend the first half hour getting concentrated, the second half hour on insight practice. And he's a really big fan of doing just one big sit, a monolithic hour. And he's already said a little bit about why he's in favor of that and yeah, reasons why that's a good idea. Um, My experience is that different things work for different people, actually. And it's good to experiment and see what works best. If it takes you a really long time to get concentrated to get to jhanas and you still want to practice jhanas off retreat, then yeah, you're going to have to sit for a long time to get concentrated to practice jhanas. It's all about the resources you have available in terms of your time and the interests in your practice and finding a way to mesh those together. Fundamentally, the practice that you actually do is the best practice. It's a lot better than the practice that you really think you should be doing, but somehow never quite get around to. So finding something that's sustainable is the most important thing. I think I can count on the fingers of one hand the people who I know well who managed to maintain Iyakema's recommendation of 2 hours of practice a day. I managed it myself for a few weeks and then work got really stressful and the whole thing just collapsed in a heap. And yeah, I don't do that kind of practice every day myself. I've just never been able to make it work with the rest of my life. Maybe it's different for you. I don't know. But yeah, finding something that's sustainable is a lot better than aiming high and just ending up with nothing. Of course, it's also a really good idea to come on more retreats. Yeah, be nice to see you all again. Be nice if you could come on another retreat with Lee and me. Lee's recommendation for retreats is to try to do 2 a year, ideally 3 with 1 a month long. Again, yeah, I hear that recommendation and I look at how much annual leave I get for my job and I think, yeah, that's not happening, is it? Doing what you can is the way forward, right? If this is something that's of interest to you, retreats are a really good place to deepen your practice. All the things that I've said already, continuing to do retreats is a good thing. Formal practice isn't the only way to practice, though. Another thing that my Zen teacher likes to talk about is we have this idea, this possibly somewhat notional idea that to master something takes 10,000 hours, right? You've heard the 10,000 hours figure. And if you think about how long it's going to take you practicing 1 hour a day to get to 10,000 hours, then you start to think, oh, crikey, that's a ways off. But what if your practice wasn't limited to time spent on the cushion? What if there were ways to bring practice into daily life? And we saw some of those in the Satipatthana, right? Mindfulness of activities, bringing mindfulness to the activities of the day. I think Lee talked about it already, actually. You pick an activity, like brushing your teeth, getting dressed, whatever, and try to do that in as mindful a way as you can. And then when that's gotten pretty consistent, then add another one and gradually mindfulness starts to spread throughout the day. Something else that's really helpful is maintaining an orientation towards insight. Insights don't only come from formal meditation practice. They certainly don't only come from being on retreat. If we're really looking, we can find insight pretty much anywhere. I'm not even going to tell you some of the places that I've had insights because I'd be embarrassed to say them out loud, but these things can happen. So the more you have an attitude that practice is an ongoing thing, the more, essentially, the more practice you get for free, quote unquote, the more that 10,000 hours starts to become actually quite a lot of your day sort of counts as practice time rather than it being limited to time spent on the cushion. And yeah, a good rule of thumb for informal practice is when you've got a task to accomplish, just be there fully with it. Be as mindful as you can of the task at hand. Just be 100% in that. And then when you find yourself in one of those little gaps in the day, one of life's loading screens, as I sometimes think of them, when you're queuing up and there's three people in front of you in the queue, or you're waiting for a bus, or whatever it is, that can be a nice little time to just reconnect. And rather than letting your thoughts spin out the way they often do, grounding back in the body, in your awareness of your surroundings, in Vedana, whatever it might be. Whatever it means to you to come back into the present moment and yeah, just see what's going on with this attitude of continuing mindfulness. Again, that really, really helps. It helps to make insight a real kind of driving force in your life rather than something that only happens from time to time. So those are my wise words about practicing off retreat, and they're pretty much all other people's wise words, which I have found to be wise myself, and so I'm passing them on in that spirit. The next thing to say is a great big thank you. Thanks to everyone who's been involved. First of all, thanks to Lee, right? We would not be here without Lee. It's been a great retreat. Lee's a great teacher. He's been so helpful to me, both in terms of my own practice and in terms of helping me to find my feet in this crazy teaching business. Many, many thanks to Lee. Next, to say thanks to all the facilitators who've made this retreat possible. So you may or may not have noticed, but we've had people from Gaia House in these sessions every single time, taking care of things like the recording and the spotlighting. We started with Claudia, then Vanessa. Right now we have Aubrey with us. Behind the scenes, there's Andrew, the online retreat coordinator, Mel, the IT support, all of the team at Gaia House. To the extent that you haven't noticed their presence, that means they're doing a really good job, right? You notice the facilitators when things are not being facilitated, and then you think, where's the facilitator? When it's all running smoothly, it just happens as if by magic. It's not magic. So yeah, thank you ever so much to the folks from Gaia House. And again, I've said this already, but I can say it twice, right? Thanks to all of you. Retreats don't happen without retreatants, and you've been a great bunch of retreatants. Noble friends and noble conversations is the whole of the spiritual life, and I've really enjoyed spending time with you. Each evening, my time, Lee and I have been getting together to chat about what's happened during the course of the day. And he asked me to say, he said, please tell them that I really appreciate their practice and I really appreciate their generosity. So, thank you again. Thanks for that, Aubrey. That's going to be a tough act to follow, but I'll see what I can do. So yeah, like Aubrey said, there is this strong tradition of giving Buddhist teachings freely. If you've been to look at Lee's website, there's bucket loads of information on there, and it's all free, including his book on dependent origination, right? He's literally written the book on dependent origination, and you can just download it for free. Some of you may have had a look at my website as well, and there's a bunch of information on there too. I don't have a book on dependent origination, but I do have some stuff, and it may be of interest. And of course, many retreat centers make retreat talks freely available as well. You're going to have access to the talks from this retreat in a variety of forms, ongoing beyond the retreat. So, yeah, these resources will continue to be available. But we do live in this money-based society. We don't have a culture that supports alms rounds. I have to pay for my own food. Nobody gives it to me. I mean, they do give it to me, but in exchange for currency tokens, right? That's how that works, and that's how we very commonly show support by in the West by giving money that can then be used for things like food, shelter, Zoom Pro subscriptions, so we can have interviews without being cut off partway through, all that kind of stuff. And we also psychologically associate money with value. This was something that was really tricky for me when I started teaching because I teach at a yoga studio where there's a fixed price on the classes. And so everybody knows you pay your, I don't know, what is it, £12 for a drop-in class, something like that. And you get your 75 minutes of yoga and you've paid your money and you get your reward and that's how that works. And then people see my class and they're like, why is your class free? Is it because you're not very good? Yeah, there's the sense that if it's free, ooh, I'm not sure about that. If I'm not paying anything for it, then can't be really that worthwhile, can it? Sometimes I've had people get quite funny about it, actually. And I've noticed that when I run a course and I do charge for that, people practice more because they're paying for it. They've paid their money and now they want to get some return on their investment. So this association between value and money is quite interesting. Don't worry, we're not going to do a contemplation on the value of money or anything like that. It's just something to point out. Retreat centers have a lot of running costs. They have physical locations, they have staff, they have all sorts of things. We are not physically at Gaia House, of course, but Gaia House has very much facilitated this retreat and made it possible. And a number of people have commented actually that in many ways it's really good to be able to do online retreats through Gaia House because reduced carbon footprint, it means that people who live further away don't have to travel, all that kind of stuff. So it's really great that Gaia House are continuing to support these online retreats in addition to their in-person retreat program. I've spent a lot of time at Gaia House. I'm really keen to see it continue to exist. Please donate to Gaia House. I do. Then there's Lee. This is what Lee does. He's really good at it. He's very generous with his time, with his energy, with his book. It would be a good thing to return that generosity. And then there's me. This is the awkward bit where I squirm a bit because I don't like talking like this. But, you know, so I do pretty well. I have a job. I have a day job. It pays pretty well. But at the same time, I am hoping to make teaching a bigger part of my life. I only have so much annual leave. Beyond a certain point, I have to start cutting salary, buying extra time off, that kind of thing. I can only take that so far before things do get a bit difficult. So, yeah, whatever people feel moved to give, I will very, very gratefully receive. Details for how to give Dana are on the notice board. Do check out the instructions. You start by specifying the amount, and then it's on a subsequent page when you say who it's for. So the instructions are good, so just make sure you read those before you try and do it. And please, please, please do consider the retreat center staff. Like I say, they've been less visible than Lee and me, and that means they've been doing their job really well. Right, that's what I had to say about Dana. What we're going to do now is a closing meditation. We're going to spend a little while just getting settled. We'll do a little bit of metta and then finish with a dedication of merit. So if you'd be willing, setting yourself up for some meditation and taking the next, let's say, 10 minutes just to get settled. So whatever practice you'd like to do. Yeah, 10 minutes. Now moving into the metta practice. Bring to mind someone you feel very warmly towards. A very dear friend, a mentor, someone who's helped you out in a tight spot. And if you're a visual person, then see this person in front of you in your mind's eye. And if not, then just imagine this person however you can. And allow your heart to open to this person, manifesting in a smile. And as you smile to this person, they smile in response, letting go of any worries or concerns they might have, relaxing, happy, at peace. And as you continue to smile to this person, silently wishing them, may you be happy. May you be well. May you be at peace. And as this person smiles back, the warmth of your open heart is reflected back to you. Silently wishing yourself, may I be happy. May I be well. May I be at peace. And now extending the warmth of your open heart to all the people on this retreat and all the people who've made this retreat possible. Silently wishing to each of us, may we each be happy. May we each be well. May we each be at peace. Allowing the warmth of your open heart to spread wider and wider in all directions. North, east, south, west, above, below, all around. Extending to everyone in your neighborhood. Everyone in your town or city. Everyone in your country. Everyone in the world. Silently wishing, may we all be happy. May we all be well. May we all be at peace. And the dedication of merit. We share the merit of this retreat with all of our teachers everywhere. We share the merit of this retreat with our families and our friends. We share the merit of this retreat with our acquaintances and the difficult people. We share the merit of this retreat with all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings find liberation. That's it. The end. Noble silence is hereby lifted. Continuous mindfulness remains continuous. Thanks again, everyone. Hope to see you all again in the future.